Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
Kim Boo York.
Yes.
Cereals.
Oh, it was so good. It was really insightful. And we kind of share a mind in a little bit. She's way smarter than me, but we do think about things the same way. And so I was like, ooh, tell me more. But it was really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to her. And it's even if you don't write serials, I think it will be helpful because we talk a lot about structure and the things that we talk about for structuring a serial, you could apply it to just standalone books or your any type of series you're writing. So it was very good.
I thought it was too.
Yeah. So kind of, I have no desire to write a 300K serial, but I'm like interested in how I can apply that to my writing. So, so it was really good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It is. Is it? What's going on with you?
Well, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel for the Kickstarter.
Woohoo!
I've made my little list of things and I've ordered the print books. And so that's like the last big thing. And I'm sent out the first batch of letters. So it's all coming along. But I thought I should mention this. I learned, because, you know, I use the Shopify store for fulfillment. And one thing I learned with that I didn't know before, which will probably be helpful to other people if they use Shopify, is that when you, wherever your store is set up, and mine is in Texas, whoever logs on to purchase something, when they go to the checkout page, it will show sales tax. And the store calculates it based on where your store is. So it always shows Texas sales tax. And then when you put in your information and go to checkout, if you live in a tax-free state or area, it, or, you know, like I only collect sales tax in Texas. So if you live in like, you know, Pennsylvania or something, it will remove it when you go to check out. So I did have some questions about people like, why is it charging me sales tax? And it's, it shows you what it could be. And it does say, you know, final sales tax calculation will be shown on the next page or something like that. But that can be kind of confusing. So if you're, if you get that question when you're doing your store, that's what's going on.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Well, that's good. That's like the main thing I've had going on. I'm recording some mystery book podcast episodes because I've got that going again. And that is about it for me. Enjoying the cooler weather.
That's Yeah. I know. I've got a sweatshirt on today. But yeah, not much going on with me. I'm in Dallas again. So y'all don't shoot
You're
me.
Home away from home.
I agreed to help keep the kids before I was like, ooh, I want to start writing again. And I'm glad I did. My daughter and her husband took their youngest to Disney because he's three. And, I mean, his birthday's today. And so they went for 3 days. And I am telling you, the videos and the pictures that we've gotten are priceless. And so it's just made my heart happy. And because he loves Mickey Mouse and he has been living his best life. And so I'm happy to do it. And yeah, but I'm also ready to start writing. Like I've thought more than once, I'm ready to get home so I can start. Yeah. I haven't had that at all. I haven't, even when I was writing a little bit back in the summer, it wasn't like, ooh, I can't wait. It was more, ugh, I really need to start writing.
You felt that external pressure.
But
it wasn't like something that you really were passionate about in your heart, right?
Not yet. Not then. But I am feeling that way now, probably because both stories I pretty much have figured out in my head. And that's why it takes me so long to write. I really have to have those big milestones figured out. Before I start writing. And I mean, I just realized that. I know that's not, well, like, people are like, Jamie, you're a little bit of a slow learner, but I do just have to,
a while to figure that out sometimes.
I just have to have it all straight in my head before I can really start. You know, that doesn't mean I necessarily completely know my characters, but I know a lot about them, you know, mm-hmm. and based on the other stuff I know. So anyway, but I'm excited. I'm excited to get home and block off time and turn my phone off. And and I don't have any more babysitting commitments for a while. So that's
or travel.
Good. Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. So yeah, of course, we're coming into the holidays, but oh well, that's the holidays are the holidays. They come every year. If you're going to shut down just because of that, you're never getting anything done. So,
Well, that is great. I'm happy to hear it. So I have one other thing that I wanted to mention is Joanna Penn has a Kickstarter going on right now for writing the Shadow book.
And,
she is like, she has all kinds of different bundles. And one of them is like an online writing group course sessions, two-hour online writing group course sessions. And just some interesting, like she has a combo of the hardcover and workbook and audiobook, like you can get everything. This is her nonfiction about figuring out what we're sometimes resisting and not exploring because it's our shadow side, and how exploring that can help you out better. So anyway, so I'll link to that in the show notes if anybody's interested. Okay, so anyway, so I'll have the link to the Kickstarter in the show notes if anybody's interested. They can check it out there.
Good. And again, if you are in need of any author services, such as consulting or branding, or just show me the way, you can find all that on my website at jamiealbright.com/ author services.
All right. Well, should we get on to?
Yeah, this is a great interview.
Yep. All right. So here is Kimbo.
All right.
Well, today we are really excited to talk with Kimbo York. Hi, Kimbo. How are you?
Hi. How are y'all doing? I'm hanging in there right now, waiting for colder weather to hit Florida. So
yeah,
crossing my fingers.
I'm in a sweatshirt, so but I'm in Dallas, so you know I'm in the north.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. Let me read your bio and we'll jump in. Kimbo York is a Gen X elder goth whose main life purpose is to provide her rescue mutt, Kiwi Boo, a good life. She is also a professional author, a former project manager, and a librarian who wears too many hats. She writes across multiple genres, including romance, fantasy, and nonfiction. So I love that bio.
I do too.
Thank you.
Well, tell us how you got into writing.
So it's kind of stereotypical, you know, I was born to be a writer type of situation. My parents were both storytellers, and that's, I think, the real key aspect for me. They're Southerners. My mother's from Memphis. My father's from the Appalachians up in Virginia, and they just spun stories so easily. And so I think it was real natural for me to get to a point where I was reading, old enough to read and old enough to start learning how to write, to want to tell my own stories. And that's pretty much been the story ever since. Like, that's my life of just constantly cycling through ways to try to find a way to tell the stories that I want to tell. So, you know, kind of bog standard in a way, but I think the real key is those my parents, the gift of my parents, their love of literature, their love of storytelling.
I love that. So when did you first publish?
Well, that's a tricky question because I was actually a reporter and a journalist for a small regional news magazine in Orlando, Central Florida, in the late 90s. So when did I first get back? Is where I first got into the professional end of it. My first fiction novel came out in late 2010,
2011. Oh,
okay. So, So that was a journey. And then that was with a small independent publisher. And then I eventually drifted into doing self-publishing a little bit later than that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do ask cutting edge questions and tricky questions. That's us in a nutshell. Cutting edge.
Aha. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I see how this is going to go now. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. Get your lawyers ready.
Okay. So second challenging question. What is your definition of success?
It's interesting because I'm going to do a kind of a shout out reference to Joanna Penn, who I'm sure you all know. Yeah. Probably a lot of your listeners know who she is. On a podcast not too long ago, she talked about the three F's, and they're freedom, fame, or fortune. Mm-hmm. And for me, success is freedom. Mm-hmm. It's that idea of being able to be my own boss, be able to stay home and travel when I want to, spend time with my dog Keely Boo. So to me, it's not a particularly a numerical, you know, goal. It's like, I want to make so much money, or I want to sell so many books, or I want to be on a bestseller list. I want to be able to have the freedom so that I can sit down and write my stories and just live my life comfortably in the way I want to live it. So that's really my goal. That's my definition of success.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. I love that answer. That's a great one. Because I was sitting here thinking, three F's, which do I want?
Yeah.
I probably want the fame. I'm not going to lie, but I do love the freedom. That's a really awesome thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of us start out thinking we want the fortune and then we get a taste of the writing life and we're like, oh, this freedom is pretty good. Like, I think we've all agreed that we're unemployable, I think, in the regular job market. So it's like, I think once you tasted that, it's not going back. You're not going back.
Yeah, exactly. Such is where we are now. It's like, yeah, no, I'm just not employable. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you got started?
So when I was really started seriously thinking about fiction writing, like I said, I got my start in journalism and reporting in the 90s. But about the same time, I really started taking my fiction writing more seriously. And I really believed back then that there was one right way to write. Like there was one way to do it. There's one way to outline. And I really wish that somebody had just sat me down and said, you're wrong. there's multiple ways to get to the end, quote unquote. You know, and these days, that one thing I love about the world that we live in right now is there's so much expansion of that idea. There's pantsers, there's plotters, there's people who use outlines, people who use write to beats. There's just so many different ways of doing it. And whatever works with your brain is the way you need to do it. And I just did not realize it. And I wasted a lot of years trying to do things the way other people told me I should do it. So craft wise, I think that was a big hurdle for me to get over the years.
Yeah. And you're writing a book now about pantsing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I am. I am writing a book about how to be a pantser.
Right.
It's actually a kind of a combination of, so Becca Sim recently published a book about being an intuitive writer. And Dean Wesley Smith has written a book about writing into the dark, which is what he calls pantsing. But really, there's not a lot of resources out there for people who are like me. I'm a pantser, like just owning that right straight up, who need those certain techniques and methods of writing that aren't really talked about because everybody just tries to push people into doing outlines, which outlines are great. And I still use outlines just in a different way than often way people are taught. So, that's one of the, that was one of the motivating factors for starting this new book is because I was just like, there's just nothing out there. Like, what if you're like me and you need help?
Love that. That's so important because there's really not a lot about it. And I don't know what the split is. Becca Sim could probably tell us like how many people are gives rough estimates, but I have a feeling it's like close to half, probably. You know, just law of averages. There's probably a lot of people that write that way. And if and like with everything, if you can figure out certain techniques to help you do certain things faster and better, you know, why not? Why not get it down so other people can learn, not go through all that, learn themselves, like kind of skip ahead faster.
Yeah, because we all run into stumbling blocks. It's just the techniques of how we get through those stumbling blocks.
Well, what about marketing? What do you wish you'd known about that?
Well, when I saw the question, I was thinking about it. And, you know, my first response was, I wish I'd understood the importance of consistency, not just in output and productivity and releases, but consistency in marketing, like constantly putting your face and your name out there. That kind of got me into the idea that, you know, marketing is always changing. Like how you market a book in 2010, definitely not how you market a book in 2023, right? I mean, we all have seen the sea changes that have happened. But what is the thing that hasn't changed? And that is word of mouth. And I think really the consistency key is where you can tap into the word of mouth. It's advertising and marketing and social media. It all circles back around to trying to get readers who are interested in your writing and then sharing that with other people. Because like I can tell you the last few books that I've read and really enjoyed, I didn't find on a bookshelf. I didn't find in some random search. I found because my friends on Twitter or Blue Sky or Facebook, they're like, hey, this is an amazing book. You should read it. And so to me, that's the real like secret sauce of marketing. You've got to be able to find a way to tap into that word of mouth. And the best way to do that is just to be consistent, constantly putting out stories, constantly being around so that people can find you.
I love that. That's really awesome. So what, I've lost my place on the question, y'all.
It's
how long have we been doing this? 3.5 years. I still don't know what my next question is. What assumptions did you make at the beginning of your writing career? And looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
So this kind of circles back to the craft question, because one of the assumptions I made early in my writing career was that there's a certain way you do things. There's the correct way you do things.
Yeah.
And so the assumptions I made in my own writing career was that I would have to reshape myself as a writer to fit into market expectation, reader expectations, these types of things. There's always going to be a level to that. I don't want to think people like I've ascended and I have no concern about those types of things anymore. But what I really wish I'd understood, the assumption I wish I could have talked myself out of, was the idea that people didn't want to write what I want to read, because they do. And maybe they may not be the biggest audience. Like if your goal, you know, Jamie, if your goal is to be, you know, fame, right, then that's a different goal than kind of what I'm looking for. And there's no shame in that. Everybody has their own, you know, goals and dreams and stuff like that. For me, it's like, I want to tell the stories I want to tell. And I need to have faith that there are readers out there. And there are. I know this. This is like a proven concept for me, but I still keep trying to shoehorn myself back into that old belief system. It's a wrong assumption. And let's see.
It is.
It's like there's 8 billion people on the planet. There's enough people to read what you want to write. And so it's just a matter of deciding if you're going to pursue that and what your goals and your dreams are for your own writing career. So that was another wrong assumption. Wrong. Like, wrong.
Well, I mean, I think that goes back to a lot of what I talk about a lot that really hampered me, I think, in if not just my career, was the thinking I had to do it like everybody else did, and that comparison. And I feel like that is so destructive and can be really, really paralyzing. If you don't listen, if you're not listening to a lot of voices, if you're listening just to a certain group of voices, then, you know, you're going to get in that kind of mindset of, I have to do it this way. And if I don't do it this way, then I'm not doing it right. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was not wrong assumption. Bad, very bad.
Yeah.
What's the most important lesson you've learned?
So this one is one I've really had to take to heart over the last couple of years, because I've had a few instances of burnout. I've had a few instances of feeling very defeated by the career. And that is, do not let the business of writing rob you of the joy of writing. And I too often fall into that.
Yeah.
I like the earlier assumptions I was talking about, you know, like I have to do it this way, I have to do it that way. And I get so wound up. that I forget that I'm telling these stories because I want to, because I have these characters in my head and I have mm-hmm. these ideas and I have mm-hmm. these big vistas of, you know, adventures, and don't let the business of it rob you of that. Just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
It's easy. It's a great answer. Bogged mm-hmm. down in mm-hmm. sort of like the admin of you're keeping up with everything that has to be kept up with, and then keeping up with all the new stuff that's coming out, and,
right,
and yeah. trying to decide what you're going to take in and what you're going to pass by. And mm-hmm. yeah, it can wear you down pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Like direct sales, which everybody's yeah. talking about. And we've talked about a ton. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm doing direct sales. I'm getting into direct sales. I'm like, listen, I've been in the IT industry. I've been building websites since 1996. Understand all the back end. I get it all. It's still a lot of work, y'all. Yeah, it is yeah, a lot yeah, of work. It is yeah. to get everything running, up and running, and all the hooks. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
I can imagine. Yeah. Well, what's the biggest change you've had to make in your thinking since 2010?
So I guess I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot because it gets back to the idea of there's no one right or wrong mm-hmm. way to do things. And mm-hmm. To a certain extent, that's just my nature. Like mm-hmm. I think as part of being in IT and being a librarian, you know, the book goes on this shelf. Mm-hmm. That's where it goes. That's what it is. So the biggest change for me has been, so not to get a woo-woo alert, I don't people talking about, but like leaning into the process mm-hmm. and trusting mm-hmm. my intuition mm-hmm. and believing that in myself and my own talents. Like yeah. there's always more to learn. I'm not saying I'm expert at everything, mm-hmm. but leaning into that instead of constantly trying to fight against it.
Yeah.
And that's been a biggest lesson for me, because as you were saying, Jamie, you've got so many people sometimes around mm-hmm. you telling you this and telling you that, and you mm-hmm. need to get on this platform and you need to do it this way. And mm-hmm. you got all this. And I'm just like, I have learned to step back.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath and then really look at what do I want to do? What mm-hmm. fits my vision for right. my author career, and what can I do? And so mm-hmm. being able to understand myself a bit better, I think that's really the biggest lesson that I've had mm-hmm. to learn. And boy, you know, the universe will teach you a lesson if you don't learn it.
It sure will.
It sure will. Come like back
over
at
and
you.
Over again. Yeah.
Over and over and over again. Yes. Yes.
That's so funny. I had to learn the same lesson over and over for many years, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a fast learner, not a fast rider, not a fast learner.
I know the feeling. Trust
I think we're me. All there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you were starting over today, what would you do differently? We have some new authors. So, you know, what would you do right now?
Well, I think if you boiled it all down, my advice would be the simple phrase, don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stop. Don't stop writing. Don't stop putting your work out there. Don't stop networking with other writers, even if you're in a lull. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know, Jamie, you've been through some times lately where yeah. things have been in a lull, right?
Yeah.
And life hits you hard in those mm-hmm. situations. You know, I lost my parents in the 90s, both of them, and when I was in my mid-20s. And I think that, you know, derailed my writing career for a lot of years, too. Mm-hmm. You have to be sympathetic and kind to yourself. But the greatest kindness a writer can do for herself, in my opinion, is to keep writing somehow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be fiction. You mm-hmm. can do essays. You can do blog posts, but right. keep going. Do not stop. I spent too many times stopping and freezing up. And I would just tell anybody who's starting today, just write.
Mm-hmm.
Finish mm-hmm. those stories. If you don't feel they're good enough, you know,
right.
mothball them, write the next story. Just mm-hmm. keep going. That would be my yeah. advice.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can agree with that, having been through what I've been through, because, you know, I didn't, like I've said in the last,
mm-hmm.
I mean, except for just starting, you know, in more than a year, all I wrote was my sister's obituary. And so I wish that I had journaled. I mean, journaling would have been, but I'm not a huge journaler. I'm a talker. I got to tell people what's going on. And, but I wish that I had, because I think it would have been good to be able to look back on some of that and see, kind of where I was and where I am now. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I agree. And had I not had this podcast, I would have virtually been out of the writing business. I mean, right. you know, that's just the bottom line. So, mm-hmm. I'm very grateful, for this podcast and for the community, but it's still, I think you're right. I think.
Well, and don't sell yourself short, Jamie, doing a podcast, because I do my own. I have Around mm-hmm. the Writer's Table with a couple mm-hmm. other writers that I do one with. We do about 2 episodes a month, not quite the same schedule as you guys. Mm-hmm. But that takes a lot of energy and creativity, too. Like like you said, you were still in it. You were still talking about writing. Mm-hmm. You didn't stop. You didn't stop. Not really. Maybe there was no pen to paper, but you didn't stop. You stayed engaged with the writing and the writing community. So, that counts, I think.
And I will tell you that I am not, I'm not at home right now. And I'm like chomping at the bit to get home so I can write, because I can't really write where I'm at right now. It's just, I'm at my daughter's. It's too loud. It's just too much going on. I mean, actually, it's not that bad, but you know, I can't really do it away from home. I got to be home to do it. And, but I'm like ready. I want to get home and start writing. So that's really encouraging. But
awesome.
As an encouragement to other people, it's been 2 years this month since I put out a book. I mean, you know, and it's been a year and 9 months since I really wrote anything. So, I mean, you know, I'm dabbling here and there with some stuff, but for the most part, you know.
That's exciting. You're getting back to it though. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
So happy for you.
Well, thank you. And not to make it about me, but again, fame is that thing. Yeah. It's my- Let's talk about me. oh gosh. Well, we wanted to ask you some specific questions about cereals.
Okay.
So Sarah heard you on the Ream podcast. So Sarah, why don't you start us off with those questions?
Okay. Well, so tell us, like, you have a book out now called Become an Unstoppable Storyteller, How to Craft Compelling Cereals. So, like, let's talk first about, like, what's your definition of a cereal? And, is there anything you wish you had known about writing cereals, like looking back?
Okay. Yeah.
That's
good. Both good questions. Well, as I explain in the book itself is, I go through great pains. Mm-hmm. It was probably the most difficult section of the book that I had to write is like, what makes a cereal different from a novel? Right. Mm-hmm. And you certainly have long, like, I mean, we've got the whole dragon, Game of Thrones thing, right? Like that's a huge Song of Ice and Fire. So I get that right. That's a huge, huge story. And so, you know, people are looking at that and they're going like, well, those are novels. I'm like, but are they really? Because to me, a serial, I often talk about a novel's kind of a clamshell. Like it's very closed. There's, you have a one set of beats that usually apply, whether it's romancing the beat or the hero's journey, the 12, 13 steps of the hero's journey. The three act structure, the basic one that everybody knows. And that's what a novel is. It has a start, it has the climax, it has the end, and lots of different steps in between. A serial, I tend to call a generative story because there is a shorter arc to go through what I call a season or an arc. If you're used to manga, then you might think of it that way. But there's also the longer arc. There is a much bigger story going on behind the shorter stories. And of course, most people are familiar with this from television series because you'll have a television season and there'll be episodes all throughout the season. But there's a long story arc going all the way through the whole season, right? And so in a sense, to me, a serial is really structured in that way. It's got layers of story arcs that are going along in tandem, but have different ends and different goals, which is why a serial can run so much longer because you can just start cycling through the story beats and the story arcs as some finish up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is fascinating to think about it this way, because I feel like an episodic series or a flat arc character mm-hmm. series right. has a lot of these elements that a serial would have, mm-hmm. because that's how you can extend them so long. You know, some right. of the mystery series go on for 20, 30 books, you know? So I think you're right. It's the layering of the arcs that you can, if you can keep those going, you can keep the story going.
Yeah, if you think if you think about some of the really popular like cozy mystery series or you know cozy mystery is what I'm thinking of, where you know those series can go on for 10, 20, 30 books, right? Mm-hmm. Well, oftentimes there's still the romantic arc, and that's mm-hmm. coming and going through, right? So each book is a mystery that gets solved, but there's this other thing that's going on. Or there's a mm-hmm. relationship with a family member, like a mother mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. the long-lost brother that they're, you know, Fanny Fine, who's looking for her sister yes. who died, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got all these different things going on that pull the story along, and that's what makes them serials, in my mm-hmm. my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the for me, like when you were saying that, the Charlaine Harris Southern mm-hmm. Vampire series, mm-hmm. which True Blood was based off of, those are very much serialized.
Yeah.
Kind of urban fantasy romance. I don't really know how you categorize those, except crack, because I couldn't put them down. But but yeah, I mean, because there is like a little mystery in every book, but the bigger will she, won't she, who will she with continues on through all the books. And you yeah. just don't know. You really don't know. And even when it seems like she's with somebody, she may not really be with somebody, you know.
Right.
It's very, they're very good. I mean, she's very good about doing that. I know some people didn't love them, but I did. So
well, and I think either whether you love the particular stories or not, your example of it is perfect. Mm-hmm. Because yes, she's got these relationships, these multiple characters, she's got ensemble, mm-hmm. you know, some books I too read all of them. So mm-hmm. I hear you, Jamie. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that one. You know, some books focused more on her family and her relationships, and right. others focused on the romance, and some mm-hmm. focused entirely on vampire politics. I've mm-hmm. kind of forgotten after all these years.
Yeah, been, yeah.
But yeah, that's exactly what that was. I would definitely mm-hmm. put that series, it is mm-hmm. a book series, into the serial bucket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you think it's important to have one continuous through line for a series, or can you just have a series of story arcs that just with the same characters, but maybe like first you're in like this quest and then you transition to like some other type of storyline?
Mm-hmm. I think you can do that. One of the ones I was talking about in the book is where that structure is very much joined, like beads on a necklace. You know, there's mm-hmm. one story mm-hmm. and there's, mm-hmm. and the through line is a specific character, or the through line is a specific situation that's going on. I think in the book I used the example of like a zombie apocalypse, and mm-hmm. you have a group mm-hmm. of characters traveling across the landscape, and so there isn't really a through line in the sense of a political conspiracy or mm-hmm. you know, they're chasing mm-hmm. after somebody, but the scenery is changing, and so mm-hmm. you know, they're going yeah. into different types of situations with every episode. So I think that's mm-hmm. very possible. I think the real key with serials is to have some kind of through line, though. I think if you've just got, you know, closed stories where it's just them, I don't know, at that point you're getting into Nancy Drew level of just mm-hmm, very mm-hmm. isolated, which I don't mm-hmm. mean to sound denigrating to that. I loved Nancy Drew, but mm-hmm. they were constructed for, you know, young readers. And mm-hmm. so they don't have those kind of follow through arcs mm-hmm. that I think would define an actual serial. So like Nancy Drew compared to, you know, the Charlaine Harris series of the vampires, like those are two different things in my mind.
Yeah. And it's the question of what's going to happen with this through line that pulls mm-hmm. you from one book to another. Like the yep. Nancy Drew books are books that are just more standalone episodic. Mm-hmm. You may go back to those because you want to go back to that setting, that character, that mm-hmm. friend group or whatever. But if you have a burning question about like, oh, is so-and-so going to get together with so-and-so? Or, mm-hmm. you know, are they ever going to find out what happened to the mom or the dad. Right. That will pull you back again and again, right?
Right. Yeah. Like the mystery of Nancy Drew's parents. Like, who are they again? Like, nobody yes. knows Nancy Drew's no. parents. Right? No. So you could make a whole through line on something like that. But yes. yes yeah. I would yeah. agree that that's the case. Yeah. Very much
yeah.
so.
Yeah. They're very different types of books, not just because the nudity and the blood in right. the Charlene Harris.
Yeah, it's a weird conversation where you're comparing Nancy Drew and Charlene Harris, but okay.
Two classics.
I'm going to roll with it.
Everybody knows
yeah,
it,
two so classics. Yeah.
Jamie's cracked up. She can't talk right now.
Oh, gosh, that's funny. Well, so how do we structure a serial? Because, like, in my mind, I am an intuitive writer. Like, okay. I am, and so structure always just seems kind of confusing for me when I mm-hmm. like think about writing it down, but then I look and I'm like, oh, I've actually written, you know, there is a structure here, but I just don't. So tell us how we structure one.
So again, it kind of depends on the type of writer you are.
Right, right, right.
I have that free spreadsheet. I mean, anybody can copy it. It's a Google Docs spreadsheet, and it gives some examples of beats and for different types of serials that you can set up. So people mm-hmm. can go just copy that. If they're outliners, if they're plotters and they just want, you know, an A, B, C, D, they could just go copy that and fill in mm-hmm. the blanks and they're good to go. I think, however, when you're thinking about setting one up, or if like Jamie and I, we're both, you know, intuitive writers who are mostly pantsers, the question is, what is the big question? So yeah. I would ask mm-hmm. yourself, what is the thing that your character must do mm-hmm. in the long run? Not in the short right. run, but in the long run. So if you have a character who's going on an epic quest, right? Mm-hmm. Well, are they just looking for the Holy Grail, or right. are they looking for personal salvation? Or, mm-hmm. you know, because in that sense, the Holy Grail is just an episode in the adventure. Mm-hmm. Finding self-acceptance, finding a family, a found family to belong to. Mm-hmm. That's the real question. That's mm-hmm. what the real long arc is. So mm-hmm. I think you don't have to plan it out. You don't have to make a big, heavy, long list of beats if you don't mm-hmm. want to. Mm-hmm. But you have to know what that big question is. What is your characters have to answer to or answer for or do in the long run, because you can keep writing towards that. You can take right. detours, you can go around it, you mm-hmm. can overshoot and then have to come back. But you know, if you know that that's the question your character needs to answer, that is a really good way to write towards the story, mm-hmm. which in a serial, because no matter what else happens and whatever you throw in their way, you know, you're having to get to that point. It's right. also a good way not to get to it too early. You know, it's,
yeah.
that's mm-hmm. the big question. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, you know, we're three chapters in and they found mm-hmm. the bad guy and they have found the love of their life. Well, what now? Like, no, right. not right. how you do it. Right. Same thing with serials. You have to be able to look further out than what is in the immediate yeah. Vision of the story. Does that answer? Mm-hmm. Does that give you some idea of what I'm trying
right.
to
say? Right. And I think, about the Alona Andrews, Kate Daniels books, the Magic Bites is the first one. Mm-hmm. And she is a loner. Like her foster father has taught her to be a loner because she can't trust anybody because she's got this blood, you know, that because it's urban fantasy. So her outward quest is to save the world from her real father. But her inward quest is to not be alone all the time anymore. And at one point in the book, she's like, how did I end up with all these people around me? Like, I have all these people. How did that happen? And same thing with, I like urban fantasy. So same thing with the Jane Yellowrock series. Sort of, she has a secret. Nobody can know it. And now she's got all these people around her that know her secret. And how did that happen? Sort of thing.
So. The example that I often use outside of the romance series is Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings is a very, mm-hmm. very long story. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of highways and byways and side stories, but there is always Frodo getting the ring to Mordor. Like that mm-hmm. is the through line. No matter what else happens, no matter, you know, Tom Bombadil and Galrogs and all sorts of fun stuff, the through line, the question is Frodo going to get to Mordor?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that because it really does give you a focus. Mm-hmm. And I can see how, like, if you've got this is your goal and you can figure out all these other little detours you can take on the way and mm-hmm. different ways you could extend or shorten or whatever you need to do. But then yes. that keeps that in mind. So I think people will be curious about, like, I'm sure this is like the question, like, how long should a novel be? As long as it should be. But like, is there, like, when you write a serial, do you have in mind like a general length of your serial, how long it's going to be, or do you just let it run its course?
So for me personally, yes, this is one of those things like, how long should my story be? Well, I don't know. How long is it? You know,
how many characters do you have?
Right, how many characters am I telling you? Right. Are you using the heroic beats or are you using right. the three-act story structure? Like all these things. I will say this, most serials are at least 100,000 words.
Wow.
And I think for me personally, when I'm thinking about writing a serial, I aim for about 300,000 words.
Wow.
Right. And, you know, but when you think about it, that's 30,000 word novellas. Like it's, you break it down. Yeah. 300,000 words. I write very long. And so this is how I knew I was a serial writer. There is a, just to blow your mind, there is one of the most popular serials, online serials out there is currently at 11 million words.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So, yeah. So there you can, there's a lot of range. And there's, I think too, with something like a serial, if you've got a really good set of characters, you can kind of pick them up again and do a whole new adventure. So there's a lot of carry through in that sense. Mm-hmm. I personally shoot for 300,000 words. I think probably a million words is not uncommon for long running serials. 11 million words is definitely an outlier. But, you know, if you want to see how long some of these go, just go to Royal Road, which is a fantasy mm-hmm. online fiction space. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of lit RPG on there mm-hmm. and fantasy and science fiction. Some of the longest running ones there are, you know, 100,000 words, 500,000 words.
Wow.
They don't have to be that long. Like I said, I think the baseline is at least 100,000 words.
Yeah.
To be a full yeah. serial mm-hmm. to be able to encapsulate all the elements that would make it a serial as opposed to a novel.
Right.
Past that, there's no limit. There's really not.
Well, that makes me think like, so I know that some of the cozy mystery series that go on for a long time, sometimes they kind of get a little stale as mm-hmm. they go on. So like these long, long serials, how do you keep them fresh? And how do you, like, do readers ever get kind of like, they just, like, do they get tired? Do they want that satisfaction of having everything tied up? And how can do that and then continue on?
We have to remember that, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle did kill off Sherlock Holmes because he got so sick of writing him.
Yeah.
You know, Agatha Christie hated Hercule Poirot in the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He wrote over 55 works, including mm-hmm. novels and short stories. So, yeah, there comes a point where you just may not want to write it anymore, and that's fine, too. But that staleness, which is what you're talking about, where mm-hmm. a series gets to a point, and usually I call it the cliff. They usually get there between, you know, 5 and 10 books. Sometimes it can go up to 20. Mm-hmm. They basically lose the through line. When you see mm-hmm. that happening, they're just cycling the same plot over and over again, which right. is fine. That's what we all do, especially in romance, right? Mm-hmm. We recycle plots all the time. But they've, since it's the same characters, they have nothing new to insert into the yeah. stories. Mm-hmm. At that point, if you still love your characters, if you still think there's more adventures for them to go on, if you still think that's important, step back and look for a new through line. Like if Frodo mm-hmm. has thrown the ring into the volcano, right? And Mordor's been done, then maybe make the journey back home just as mm-hmm. adventurous. Make mm-hmm. it full of brigands who are mm-hmm. now let loose because the bad guy has fallen and they're no longer mm-hmm. under control. And right. so they have a goal, which is to get home, but that might take another 100,000 words. It might take another 5 books. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like that something's gone flat and stale, think of a new through line, like mm-hmm. look at a side character who was really popular 3 books ago and see mm-hmm. if there's some way you can bring that character back and make them the villain. Like maybe they were just a evil side character, but now make them somebody important. They went away. They got a new, you know, they got their new face or something back to cause trouble. And so you need to look at that element because that's what's going to drag people and keep people reading the series, even though you really are recycling the plots over and over again.
Okay. Yeah. That's great advice though. That's really great advice. So tell us about Reem. You're on Reem.
I am.
And, so how do you grow an audience on Reem? What's the best way to do that?
Well, Reem is not a discovery platform. So
okay,
not
so you bring people there?
Bring people there, okay. Right? And in that sense, it's kind of like Patreon. Like you don't go to Patreon to find an artist. You find an artist, and then you find out they have a Patreon. That's how that works, right? And it's the same for Reem. So we have a lot of authors who are... especially if they already have a back catalog, they're going through and putting Reem links at the back of their stories. They're offering free reads, cut scenes, extra epilogues, some character, some people do character dialogue, like what did you want to hear? You know, ask my character a question, that type of thing. And they're making those perks for members. Okay. So they'll give away a little bit. They'll give away, you know, which we all do, right? Everybody gives away something. But the point of the giveaway is to draw them into Reem. As opposed to driving them to Amazon to buy something. And a little, people get a little uncomfortable with that. And I definitely understand why, because I was in that ecosystem for a long time, too. I've been in KU. I've been out of KU. I'm wide now. I get it. But the thing is that the idea of subscriptions is that you're creating a long-lasting connection with readers who love your work rather than just, you know, throwing a book out the window and having them read it one time. And giving you money one time. It kind of goes back to the, at least in tech circles, I don't know, you guys may be familiar with it or not, but the 1,000 true fans theory, are you familiar with that? So it kind of goes back to that. Like if I can find 1,000 readers, out of the 8 billion people on the planet, if I can find 1,000 readers who would be willing to give me about $8 or $10 a month, man, I'd be sitting pretty. I'd be very fine. Now, there are some authors, I think, on the Subscription for Author Facebook, Michael, who's one of the, who's the CEO of Reem, just did a whole little video thing on going to Chris Hopper's fan meet. And Chris Hopper is somebody, he has people paying him like $200 a month.
Oh my.
Right. Now he gives them, you know, swag and he gives them sneak peeks to books and he gives them special hard copy editions. They're not paying him for nothing. But, you know, these are super fans. These are people who are really invested. They're evangelical about him because they want to go and they want to tell all their friends to read his work. And so like, Jamie, for you, where the goal might be to try to get your name in front of as many people as possible, it may seem like, well, why would I want to corral everybody on Reem and just have them trapped there and paying me? The point is to create the excitement around you as an author and have a fan base as an author, because that's what's really going to push you over the line. Right. When you start pushing out those stories again, it's going to be your fan base who's going to go, Jamie's back, baby. She's got some great books. And they're going to support you while spreading the word about you because there's a commitment and there's a community there. So that's something I really wanted and what I love about Reem. About subscriptions in general. I happen to be on Reem. I'm also on Substack. I like both of those platforms. But whatever your subscription platform you're using, that's definitely the advantage of it, I think.
Well, so tell us about your tiers and how your Reem is set up. Because there's so many varieties.
Oh, man. And let me tell you, when I was first setting it up, I had different tiers than I do now. Oh, I really simplified. I simplified so much. So this is not an endorsement or a shout out, but there is a system called the Author Ecosystem by Russell Moatti and Mark. I took that and I found out I'm a forest, and people who are curious can go find out about that. But what it really told me was that trying to diversify myself with a lot of pen names is not the right way to go. So when I was setting up my tiers, I first did it each tier as a different pen name, and that just got to be really complicated, and I didn't like it, and so I like blew that away. Fortunately, nobody had signed up by then, so it was no problem. But what I have now is I have the House of York site, because I'm York, House of York. It's kind of my ode to my parents. And you know, there's rooms in the house. There's the studio. There's Keely's porch. If you just want to support my dog, that's $3 a month. Like, help feed my dog, right? Mm-hmm. But there's the studio. There's the den. There's the, you know, the main room. And so I labeled the tiers like this to try to develop that kind of community feel, that vibe. And the different tiers are really just different access, faster access, early access to stories. I want to eventually get to the point where I can introduce a higher tier to give, you know, swag and actual mm-hmm. material goods and hard copies of books, but I'm not there yet. So I really simplified. I went from very complicated level of tiers to just like three tiers now. So it's yeah. like, but mm-hmm. that makes it easier for me as a writer. We were talking earlier about know your own limits, and I realized I was exceeding them. So for me, I just really wanted to keep things simple with setting up my ream tiers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the advice for everybody who's going into subscriptions. Start simple. You can always add more later.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well,
so yeah. that brings up something that's kind of been in the back of my mind. You mentioned burnout earlier. Mm. And so like dealing with like having a subscription and writing serials, it's kind of like a podcast, you know, you do it regularly and mm-hmm. there's really no endpoint for some of it. So how would you advise people to manage all these recurring things and not burn out?
I think the thing is, and it kind of does get back to what we're talking about, know thyself. Mm-hmm. And so previously I worked in disability services with the local university, and I was the technology coordinator. So I worked with a lot of different students trying to find technologies and ways for them to access the information that they needed. And one thing that I was so grateful for that job, even though it wasn't a great fit for me as far as a career goes, because I learned how different brains can be. Mm-hmm. So let's say, for instance, if you, Sarah, are somebody who really gets a dopamine hit out of deadlines, like deadlines do it for you, baby. Like that's what you need. So the way to build on that is to make all your tiers around on the second Tuesday of every month, I'm going to give you a chapter, you know, and mm-hmm. that way it will feed into your desire to do more. If the very idea of that sends chills down your spine, right?
Choice B for me.
If that is an issue for you, and we do have a lot of neurodivergent people who are setting up subscription models. So this is actually a topic we all talk about a lot, is consistency and promises to your readers. So instead of saying on the second Tuesday of every month, say every month I will give you a new chapter. Don't promise when, don't promise on the day, don't promise how long the chapter is going to be, and just communicate with your readers, this is my situation. You know, I have health issues, I have kids, I have anxiety. That's me. Hello. So I can't keep to that kind of schedule, but I can promise you that you will get a new chapter every month. Like, know yourself, know how you produce. How much do you write every day? Do you write every day? Do you write once a week? Do you write 5,000 words once a week, or do you write 100 words every day? So with those kinds of understandings of how you work and how your brain works, create your tiers, or create your promises, I should say, to your readers around that. Instead of listening to somebody who says, well, you need to post a chapter every week, and that chapter needs to be 2,000 words long, and it needs to be blah, 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 blah. Just no, screw that. Do mm-hmm. what works for you, and just be clear with your audience, the people who are signing up, what they're going to get from you. Because I think mm-hmm. anybody can do it. It's just a matter of knowing how your brain works and your best way of getting the most output.
Yeah. So I have a question then, as a fellow discovery writer, pantser, how do you handle that? Because I mean, you know, I can get partway into a story and go, I'm going to do something different here, you know, and then I have to go back from
those last five chapters.
Yeah, forget that. We're not doing that. Who's Mary? I have no idea. She's dead to me, as I said on the last podcast. But yeah, I mean, how do you handle that?
Well, again, know thyself. If you know mm-hmm. that there's a point where you get to your story where you're going to decide whether you're going to continue it on, don't mm-hmm. start posting the story until you get to that point.
Ah, good point. Yeah.
For instance, for me, it's the 30,000 word mark.
Yeah.
At the 30,000 word mark, I know where the story's going to go. I know who my characters are at last because mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. know who they are. I'm a discovery writer. I have no mm-hmm. idea. I got a name. That's all I got. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. So, but 30,000 words, I kind of know the characters. I know where the plot's going, and I know if it's going to be sustainable for a longer story or if it's something right. that should be a shorter story. That's mm-hmm. me personally. Another thing I highly recommend for discovery writers, not for everybody, but to have multiple projects going at the same time, because mm-hmm. even if you are sharing a story, and it kind of stalls and you're like, man, the next chapter's giving me grief. I need to mm-hmm. go on something else. Communicate with your readers. Let them know there's going to be a short hiatus on this story while you're going to work on this other story. That way you're always giving them something. And in my experience, readers generally, if they're your subscribers, if they're actually paying you money for your stuff, they're supportive. And our experience has been I'm speaking generally of subscription authors, is that authors who've had to take a break because of mental health issues mm-hmm. or a family member died or, mm-hmm. you know, they had to move suddenly, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that their readers would be like, that's fine. Just come back mm-hmm. when you can. We don't mm-hmm. mind. And that's really understanding. So it's clear communication with your readers. And for me as a discovery writer, having multiple projects going at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually in the middle of launching one, Transmigrated Terry, which is kind of a portal fantasy. And I finally hit the 30,000 word mark. And so mm-hmm. I know I'm going to be able to continue this story, and I'll start posting that here in November. So it's okay. just having all those kinds of pieces of yourself and knowing yourself and having a way out should you need it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice. Yeah.
Well, I just had a coughing fit, so I'm sorry. I tried to mute myself, but I don't know if I was fast enough, but I think I'm okay now. I'll survive. Yeah. So, well, what is the best thing you've done to set yourself up for success?
Ah. You know, I had several answers to that. The best thing that I've set myself up for success with has been not a technique, not even what we've talked about of having faith in myself and trust mm-hmm. in my intuition. It's been this time purposefully creating a network of supportive fellow authors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way that kind of includes y'all, because I've been listening to your podcast for so long. Like, you're like mm-hmm. family to me. I'm like, oh, I'm going to listen to them and they're going to support me. Like, you didn't know who I was, but you were supporting me.
Yes.
But I also have a lot of that in real life. Like, I have real life friends here I meet and do co-working with, and we do writing and we talk about our careers. Mm-hmm. I have people, forums online that I can go to, not just subscription for authors forums, but some other ones. I have a community on Blue Sky where I talk with other authors and we talk and communicate. That was something that was really missing for me. So mm-hmm. that when I did hit problems, when I did hit rough waters, mm-hmm. really didn't have anybody to talk to or support me or talk me through things. And like you were talking, Jamie, earlier about how you didn't write, but you had the podcast, right? So in a way, you mm-hmm. know, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You had Sarah, you had your other friends, you had the community around this podcast, and that helped kept you going. So this time I have a lot of fellow authors. I have authors who are doing subscriptions. I have authors who are, you know, fine, very high-minded literary authors. I don't understand that breed, but they're precious. And but we all talk about writing and they're very supportive. So having a supportive network, I think, is really the most important thing for setting me up for success this time around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree. That's awesome. That's such a great answer. Well, this has been amazing. I've loved it. Can you tell everybody where we can find out more about you and your books and your serials and all of that?
Sure. The best way to do it is to go to my online hub or my mm-hmm. links tree, whatever people want to call it. It's at houseofyork.info. So that's House mm-hmm. of York, all one word, .info. And mm-hmm. that has links to my Substack, to my Ream. My Substack is mostly nonfiction. I talk a lot about writing on there. Mm-hmm. Ream, which is where all my fiction lives, mm-hmm. My direct sales store, links to buy Become an Unstoppable Storyteller. And just, you know, let's you'll go there, you'll find me.
You won't miss me.
Yeah.
Great. House of York. That's great.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. It's been great. Just dig into all this together and geek out on cereals. We've loved it.
So thanks. I love it. Yeah. So thank you so much. It's great. Like I said, I've listened to y'all for a long time. It's been a real honor to be on here and to meet you and to talk to you. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Great time. Mm-hmm. So we will have all those links in the show notes. And they will be at wishidknownforwriters.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link /support, sign up there. And thanks to Alex Larberg for editing and producing the podcast and to Adria Wiggins for doing the admin. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.